This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
In essence, what you'll be able to do is be able to purchase a piece of an offsite solar system. You'll be able to make a financial investment in that and then have the benefit of all that generation be reflected upon your utility bill.
Is your home one of the millions that haven't been able to get solar because you're a renter? The cost of solar panel installation is half of what it was just 5 years ago, which should be opening up opportunity everywhere. But many homes and businesses are locked out because they don't own their rooftops. The good news is that policymakers are starting to look for creative ways to expand solar access. Just recently, the Obama administration announced a $520 million initiative for community solar farms, which could allow everyone to get on board the renewable revolution. This week on Sea Change Radio, we talk about this community solar initiative in a panel discussion with Adam Browning and Catherine Bagley. Browning is the executive director of the nonprofit solar advocacy organization Vote Solar, and Bagley is an environmental reporter for Inside Climate News. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Catherine Bagley of Inside Climate News and Adam Browning of Vote Solar. Adam, Kat, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to be here. Thanks for the invite.
So Catherine, why don't you first set the stage, summarize a piece that you recently penned for Inside Climate News titled Solar Breakthrough Could Be on the Way for Renters. What exactly does this mean? Just spell out the kind of bullet points on what the problem has been and what the Obama administration is trying to solve with this recent announcement.
So the Obama administration announced last month that they are planning to funnel $520 million from foundations, governments, and social impact investors to building what are called community or shared solar farms. And the significance of this is that there's a large part of the housing market that currently is unable to actually get solar energy. Either people are renters and their landlords, don't have any incentive or haven't installed solar panels on their roofs. They live in multi-unit buildings, apartment buildings, condos, where they don't have access or authority over the roof space. And there's also a good share of American homeowners who actually don't have a great setup for solar. You know, maybe their house is facing the wrong way or they're too shaded. And, you know, this is a massive piece of the potential market for solar. There are estimates ranging everywhere from, you know, that this sector is, you know, 50 to 80% of American households.
Yes, Adam, we've had you on before to discuss a little bit of the renter conundrum. How is this announcement good news for potential solar customers?
Kat captured this very well. There is a large part of Americans who don't currently have access to be able to participate in the renewable energy economy. So if you own your own roof, you own your own single family house, you can go solar and enjoy the benefits of not having to buy your electricity from your utility. And that's both an economic benefit as well as an environmental benefit. But for the rest of us, it's really a question of developing new policies that allow that kind of access. So we've been working in states around the country, and New York actually was the latest with a really big groundbreaking announcement where, in essence, what you'll be able to do is be able to purchase a piece of an offsite solar system. So if you're a renter, there could be a solar farm or a field in your community or even farther away, you'll be able to make a financial investment in that and then have the benefit of all that generation be reflected upon your utility bill. It's really an amazing thing, and we're all for it. We've got to make sure that that it's not just homeowners that can benefit from choosing to invest in solar. We really need to enlarge this and make the pathway for this kind of choice much bigger.
If you have any numbers in front of you, Kat, can you explain how the homeowner pie is divided up from the renter pie in general in the United States, and then let's unfurl that into the solar space.
Sure. So currently, about 64% of Americans are homeowners, and the rest of the market is renters. And this number is only expected to grow. We've seen kind of this massive influx of people moving to cities, and population experts think that that number is just going to continue to increase, that cities like LA and San Francisco and New York and Atlanta are going to continue to grow.
And these are cities where real estate prices are continuing to rise. So owning homes becomes more and more prohibitive for these city dwellers.
Exactly. And you know, in cities, because of those prohibitive costs, the majority of people are renters. So in San Francisco, I think the number is about 80% of residents are renters. In New York City, that number is about 70%.
So this is just a toe in the water for the Obama administration in terms of its renter strategy for solar expansion. What needs to happen for the renter solar market to be comparable to the homeowners? Is this $520 million announcement enough?
Yeah, you know, ultimately this is going to be about developing state-level policy that provides a pathway for access. So let me give you another way of looking at this right now. So Google, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, what do all these companies have in common? Well, they are some of the most well-respected, innovative, and fastest-growing companies in the world, and they all have policies for 100% renewable energy. So whenever Google is setting up a new data center someplace, they have to be able to get access to be able to buy 100% renewable energy in order to power that data center. Given that, you know, each data center is $1.5 billion investment, they're able to work out unique esoteric deals with the local utility, with the help usually of the governor and the legislature, who want to see this investment happen, to allow them to sole source their electricity from wind and solar. Why shouldn't everybody have access to the same sort of deal? But when it comes to electricity, arguably it's the single or the second largest ingredient in all these tech companies' products. When they think about electricity, they think about renewables. So clearly, you know, when you have these dynamic companies investing in renewable energy, it's pretty clear that this is a good investment. And again, we want to expand this so that you don't have to be a favored company with a lot of clout to be able to access this, but that it becomes, this is about democratizing energy. This is about allowing people to make their own choices. When you poll America, super majorities of Americans want to see this transition to renewable energy. Why shouldn't we be able to just make that choice on our own? So what we need here, in essence, is state-level policy that allows people to choose what kind of energy they get. Right now, if you own your own house, you can make that choice. This is about expanding our utility monopolies to expand the idea of serving the public good to allow all customers to make the choice about what they're buying.
So, Kat, when we're talking about cooperative solar farms, that doesn't just limit us to home renters. It also includes businesses, correct?
It does. And, you know, that's another huge share of the market. There's a lot of businesses that operate out of things like strip malls or, larger buildings where they don't have access or the authority to install solar panels. And oftentimes, you know, when you're talking about businesses, they're constantly growing. So a lot of these businesses are moving from, you know, one smaller space to a bigger space to a bigger space, ideally. And, you know, they're not going to lug solar panels around with them. So this is also a great opportunity for them as well.
Don't put a price on my soul. burden is heavy. My dreams are beyond control. When that steamboat whistles.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Catherine Bagley. She's an environmental reporter for Inside Climate News, as well as the executive director of Vote Solar, Adam Browning. Adam, if you could maybe break down how the federal, state, and local rebates work, just very basically for homeowners, and then maybe contrast that for how this could possibly work, this community solar plan could work for renters. Just you were talking about how it needs to go on a state level, but each level of government is playing a role for potential buyers. Even if that local government isn't on board, they're drawing a line in the sand saying we're not really for renewable energy.
Right. So in the United States, most of the most important decisions around electricity and electricity regulations are handled at the state level. There's really a commitment to federalism there. And that's why we see very disparate policies in different states. And this can range from the requirements for utilities to increase the amount of renewables that they in the mix of electricity that they provide to their customers. So in California, for example, there are laws that say the utilities have to provide 33% of the electricity that they provide to their customers have to come from renewable resources. And we're well on track to achieving that. Earlier this year, Hawaii actually passed a law that will require 100% renewables by 2040, I believe, which is real leadership in action. Other states don't have these types of policies, and as a result, you often see, in some instances, not that much in the way of renewables coming on. This is actually changing quite a bit. There are a lot of places now, let's take Georgia, for example, where you're seeing utilities viewing solar as their lowest cost resource. And they're building quite a lot of it simply because it is the most economic path for them to go forward with. The other way that state policy impacts solar is whether or not you as a homeowner have access to be able to generate your own power, interconnect to the grid, and get value for that generation. So there are policies called net metering that say if you generate more electricity than you're using at any one point in time, you can feed it back into the grid and get a fair shake for that.
In the cooperative setup, would net metering be in place as well? Would a renter who is bought into a solar cooperative, a community farm, would that community farm be able to sell extra credits back to the grid?
So in essence, this will depend upon how these different state-level programs get set up. What you want is to have that community farm feeding electricity into the grid. The owners of that will be able to get the value from that generation, the value that accrues to all the ratepayers, and they will be able to have that value be credited on their own bill. So you're not just, donating to the building of a solar farm someplace, you're actually investing in it, and that's the real difference.
Well, and I imagine that if for some reason the solar farm generated more electricity than perhaps your electricity bill was for a month, you would get a credit for future bills. Is that right, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, again, you get the credit for all the generation under your that accrues to your investment. So it depends upon how much you how much of that farm you have invested in.
And are community solar farms like the only real viable path to get renters on board with solar? Or are there examples of policies elsewhere that have incentives for landlords to unilaterally install solar on their homes and multi-dwelling units?
So in California, there are policies where if you are in a multi-unit building, you can put a solar system on the roof and then have the electricity credited to multimeters, below that roof on a single parcel. This new policy we're talking about just expands it beyond the property boundaries. I think significantly what the Obama announcement addressed was really also addressing low-income housing and announcing that initiative that will focus on making sure that federally owned or assisted low-income housing also have access to participate in the solar economy.
Yes, and to build on the initiative that you mentioned, Adam, let me quote from Kat's article in Inside Climate News, quote, "The new initiative also pledges to install 300 megawatts of renewable energy in federally subsidized housing by 2020, triple the previous pledge, and employ AmeriCorps, the federal government service program, to install solar capacity and hire solar workers in low-income communities." It's really a pretty cool idea.
It is.
And getting back to the cooperative model, either Adam or Kat, if you want to address this, are there other countries that are ahead of the U.S. in terms of their community solar farms?
I don't know. I don't think so. I do think that this is a particularly American flavor of solar policy, with its emphasis upon consumer choice, allowing people to actually have access to the products they want. We have a very antiquated approach to energy policy in this country that was really set up in a time where things were quite different. In essence, we give monopolies to state-sponsored monopolies to for-profit institutions to provide a service that is supposed to be for the common good. These for-profit companies are often, making choices that are in their business model that put really zero value on having a livable planet. So for all Americans that actually would like to see that changed, the really key element here is to change that regulatory approach and allow people, not these state-sponsored monopolies, to make those critical choices about what they want in their energy mix. So I very much view this as as right in the mainstream of a very American approach to being able to make your own consumer choices and not having a government-sponsored monopoly make those choices for you.
The reason I ask is that countries that are now well ahead of the United States in terms of their clean energy mix have similar or even less home ownership. For example, I'm just looking here, Denmark has almost identical home ownership rate to the U.S., as does Germany. Actually, Germany's like 53%. The United States is 64%. So these are countries where there's a lot of renters, and yet somehow they are managing to get off of fossil fuels faster than us.
I think it's important to note that, community solar is an interesting, innovative idea, but it's not the easiest way for renters to get access to solar energy. Because if you're going through community solar, renters have to actually have the impetus to go out and, investigate where they can buy a share, and then, then the community solar farm then sells the electricity to the local utility company, and then the utility company takes that off your bill. But most renters, when you move into an apartment, and I'm a renter and have been for my entire adult life, you move in and all you do is place a phone call to your local utility company and you say, "Hey, I'm a new customer, start sending me bills." So the easiest way for renters to get access to solar energy is, frankly, for utility companies themselves to start investing in solar energy. But we're not seeing that happen as fast as a lot of people would like. And so this is kind of another option for those renters that do really want to take part of the clean energy economy. And I think when you're seeing what's happening in other countries, Germany and Denmark and a lot of European countries that have really high rates of renewable energy, I imagine that a lot of that is coming from the utility companies themselves.
Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Catherine Bagley of Inside Climate News, as well as Adam Browning of Vote Solar. Adam, we were just talking about the role that utility companies play when it comes to solar. Maybe you can catch us up on some of the more important happenings to get utilities to include clean energy as part of their portfolios.
So this is an advocacy approach. When we've got a situation where the utilities are not making the right decisions or the decisions that their customers don't want to make, you can either try to change the utility business model or you can simply open it up so that customers can make choices on their own. This is the latter approach that we're talking about right now. I would say we are seeing really interesting and intriguing changes. The whole premise behind solar advocacy over the last decade has been to increase access and bring down costs. How do we bring down costs? We do that through scale. And so the early advocacy efforts were, can we provide incentives, subsidies, in order to build scale in the industry? Now, that is not the advocacy approach at all. There are multiple states around the country where you can go solar today without any state-level incentives and generate your own power more cheaply than you can buy it from the utilities. Then on the sort of utility scale side, the large wholesale side, we are seeing utilities around the country. This isn't just a sunny West Coast phenomenon, but this is, you know, in Nevada, in Texas, in Georgia, in South Carolina, in Minnesota, where you're seeing utilities come to the conclusion that buying solar is cheaper than their other alternatives. The prices on these sort of large solar farms for 20, 25-year contracts are much cheaper than you could build a new coal or natural gas or nuke plant.
And this is the new reality that wasn't in initial plans 5 years ago even, right?
This is the new reality that has been brought about by years of advocacy and years of growth in the solar industry. Again, the whole idea was provide incentives not as an end in and of itself, but as a means to an end. And the end was a cheaper technology. Is working. That is happening now. We've got situations where we're able to see the actual prices of these bids. And in many instances, you know, you have utilities locking in 20, 25 years of power under 5 cents, in some cases even under 4 cents per kilowatt hour.
With the scale, you can get those prices way down, right?
Right. And so the real comparison is, you know, what would it cost you to build a new natural gas plant or a new coal plant, which are polluting, or a new nuke plant? Now, nuke costs are famously non-transparent, but you see estimates around 12 cents and above. And you're looking at, you know, building new coal and new natural gas. You know, those are fuel commodities that prices fluctuate. You will not see any natural gas provider guaranteeing 20 years out that they can provide, you know, if you build a plant now, that they'll provide it for under 5 cents for a 20-year guaranteed contract. That's the beauty of renewables, is that there are no fuel costs. It's all in your upfront capital costs. So once you install the technology, it will continue to produce as long as the sun comes up in the morning. And if the sun isn't coming up in the morning, we've got other problems besides your electricity prices.
That's right.
I think it's also important to note the influence that the Clean Power Plan has had on utilities. You know, I think a lot of states are seeing kind of the pending efforts, the pending federal regulations that will reduce or cap greenhouse gas emissions. And they're using that kind of, they're preparing ahead of time for those plans by increasing the share of power that they're getting from renewable energy.
Why don't you take a step back and tell our listeners what the Clean Power Plan is?
Sure. So, I mean, the Clean Power Plan is an effort by the EPA to regulate greenhouse gas emissions in an effort to fight climate change. And that's going to require states to, cut down on coal burning and other really kind of heavy carbon intensive fossil fuels. And what you're seeing is that a lot of states are kind of in preparation for the final rules, which are expected to be released this summer. A lot of states are kind of taking preemptive steps and ramping up their investments in solar energy.
I mean, I would just add a few more comments. Kat had it exactly right. Under the Clean Power Plan, polluters will no longer be able to simply externalize the cost of polluting your air and shortening the lives of your children. They will have to start bearing the burden of that. And when you really internalize that into the polluter's business model, the coal and other polluting resources become much less economic. So this transition to renewable energy is going to be a benefit for the pocketbook as well as for the lives of and well-being of our generation and next generations. It's really a win-win.
When we were talking about what does a natural gas plant or a nuclear power plant cost versus a renewable investment, it's really, you can't do the apples to apples comparison because of the externalities.
Exactly.
I mean, I would also add, I think it's important to note that, you know, as we talk about the boom in solar energy and the 50% drop in price in the last five or so years, you have to kind of put it into perspective. I mean, solar has experienced a massive amount of growth, but it still only accounts for about 1% of the entire U.S. energy portfolio. And so, you know, there's a lot of room to keep expanding here. And I think that's why we see the Obama administration really pushing initiatives like supporting community solar projects. There's a huge market of solar customers that aren't getting energy right now, can't get the energy right now. And I think the entire industry is kind of rapidly trying to wrap their head about how do we tap into this kind of market, the share of the market. And there was a study that was published by the National Renewable Energy Laboratory in April that said that kind of with proper investment, with proper pushing, community solar could account for 32 to 49% of all distributed solar on the market by 2020. And that's a significant amount. So I think it's just important to remember, yes, solar has had an incredible boom and it will continue to have an incredible boom. There's nobody saying really otherwise, but you know, it still has a long way to go to compete with traditional fossil fuels.
Catherine Bagley of Inside Climate News and Adam Browning of Vote Solar, thanks so much for being my guests on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Rodney Jones, Bob Dylan, and the Jayhawks. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.